I'm Eric Holdeman, and this is Project Impact. And this is a show about emergencies and disasters that can happen anywhere here in Washington State. And today's show is on the United States Army Corps of Engineers. And many of you have probably heard of the Corps of Engineers, but today after this show, you'll know a lot more about them and their various missions. And who better to talk about the Corps of Engineers than my guest today, Colonel Deborah Lewis, who's the commander, Seattle District, United States Army Corps of Engineers. Welcome, Colonel Lewis.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks for coming on the show. This is something we've been wanting to do for quite a while, and I'm glad we've captured you today.
Well, I appreciate being here. Thank you for welcoming me.
Okay. And, you know, in this segment of the show, the Corps of Engineers has a lot of different types of missions and roles. And how about talking about, you know, three or four of those key ones that the Corps has? It's maybe strengthening national security. I know it's one you've talked about with me before.
Yes. Well, I'd be very happy to, Eric. It's a lot of excitement that we do, and you'll understand when I'm done why I love doing the job that I do. But the main areas, I try to simplify understanding what does the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers do each day, because we do so many different things. But in general, I like to think about our three themes that we have. And the main one, which trumps all the others, is strengthening national security. We have to do that. If we don't have a country, then really the rest of it doesn't matter. And so we do that in a many number of ways. For example, we have folks who have volunteered, and they're in Iraq and Afghanistan. We have 21 folks right now, and 75 have already done a deployment and returned.
And these are these uniformed people, or are they civilians also? And this is just from your district.
This is just from my district. In the Corps of Engineers, over 2,000 have deployed. But it's a great question that you ask, because that's where there's a lot of confusion as to who we are. And our organization is comprised of 35,000 people. That does not include the combat engineers that you see, the tactical units. That's the 35,000. So I might want to ask you, and others might want to know, how many of the 35,000 are in uniform? And for us, it's only about 650 folks are in uniform, just like me. So in my district in particular, we have 800 people, but only, I was down to two people for one time, including me. And we have five officers right now that are assigned to the organization. One is getting ready to deploy to Iraq. Two just returned from Iraq.
Okay, so they are military and civilian going to Iraq out of your
They are
district.
Volunteers, every one of them. The majority of the 20 are our civilian volunteers.
Okay.
And they wear uniforms just like the military, except on their name tag, instead of saying U.S. Army, it says DA, Department of the Army Civilian. But they wear the battle dress uniform. They are not allowed to carry weapons, however.
Okay.
And so in strengthening national security, that's just one way, but that's a huge way right now we're helping with the global war on terrorism. Millions of dollars in trying to establish infrastructure, everything from schools, border facilities, sewage plants, water treatment plants, as well as oil, managing that. That kind of became, we've done a little bit of that, but not in such a big way. Electricity. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has within it the somewhat tactical organization, Prime Power, and they're the ones who have the great capability, especially in disasters and emergencies across the world, can put in a 500 megawatt facility.
It's a lot bigger than my 5 kW generator I have at home. It's a huge semi-trailer.
It's city-type operation. Yes, that's correct. Another way that we help is in our military facilities. And I think you're familiar with two ones that we work very closely with. One is the Army, and that's at Fort Lewis. Great name, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it's a great name. Named after great. Someone.
Lewis and Clark. Yes, it was. But at Fort Lewis, we are just doing some amazing construction. They are improving the quality of life of the soldiers, as well as building facilities that are saving lives as we speak. We have an urban warfare training site, which I think that some of the other folks, other agencies, FBI and others, are trying to leverage the capability to go into an urban area. It is going to have cameras in every location. We almost have that completed. But it's a 54 buildings, and you really have a lot of latitude in what you can do. You can do some live fire on that range as well, and airdrops.
And just would want to compliment you on that. I had an opportunity when I was in the Army and an infantry officer to go through a German equivalent of that, an old German village called Bonnland in West Germany, then West Germany. And combat in cities is extremely difficult, much different than the normal environment that you're operating. Some of the huge challenges that troops deploying to Iraq have is this combat in cities environment. And so having a training facility like that, 54 building, that's a lot, is a great add that the Corps has made to, you know, preparing us for the military.
Absolutely. We have everything from houses to very difficult buildings to come into, working buildings, a gymnasium, other things are at that site to make it very credible, very realistic. We also, to complement that, are just finishing up. They had a battle simulation center, but we're finishing up state-of-the-art battle simulation center that has over 100 miles of cable in it, over 900 computers. They're getting ready to do the largest battle simulation in the world, ultra-focused lens from that site. And so they're very pleased with the ability that we were able to be a part of that. And it's real-time feeds that they're getting from Iraq and Afghanistan to update their tactics and techniques to save lives.
And I don't know, it's ultra-focused lens, that's oriented on the Korean peninsula.
It is, but it involves the globe.
Okay.
People everywhere are playing in that. And other areas, McCord Air Force Base, we've done a lot of things. I'm sure you're familiar with their C-17 package.
And that's their newest airplane.
That was their newest airplane. And when each of the services, when they get a new piece of equipment, you have to build the facilities in order to accommodate that piece of equipment, because usually the other facilities are not usually adaptable to that. So we help them in that way.
And when you talk about build, you don't have a construction company.
It's a wonderful question and often confused. We provide oversight for the federal government funding that we receive, but in fact we use, for construction purposes, 100% is contract out to private entities, and 75% of our architectural and engineering design, A&E design is what they call it.
Okay.
But we depend on the American people and the private businesses in order to do what we do for this great nation.
Okay. How about, when you talk about the nation, you've been talking about the national security, strengthening it. How about sustaining the economy?
That is the second leg, as I like to call it, the chair, where I put the two front legs being strengthening, sustaining a prosperous economy, and also safeguarding the environment. Too often in tension, those two forces, because if you want to build, where we often get involved with is if you're going to be impacting wetlands or if you're impacting navigable federal navigation channels. And so we have to be involved because it is the nation that is at stake. We have a no net loss of wetland provision that's been given us by Congress in order to execute, and so that's something that we get involved with. So most of the American people see us on the regulatory side because if they want to build anywhere, usually especially in the Northwest, as you're familiar with, there's a lot of wetlands or a lot of waterways, and so they'll have to get a permit. And what we're trying to do is ensure that we are safeguarding our environment. And we do it, one, that's the prevention side, just like you do in emergency operations or disaster response, but also on the tail end, now we're doing a lot of ecosystem restoration around the region. And it's been very, very successful with the help of our congressional leaders. They have done a superb job of getting priority and funding to places where they can be used, not only for military construction, but also for this region and helping make it a very vital, sustainable environment. But the economic side, other things that we do there.
It just seems like there'd be a significant tension. There's always a sense we're going to do something new, and we have this mission of protecting the environment, and then you're still.
And people want to build,
yes.
People want to live. I want that house here. I want to build my pier right here. And what they may not appreciate is the fact that if everybody did that, then we would have no habitat. And so it is a very difficult place sometimes my folks especially find themselves in with unhappy people because they may not be able to get exactly what they want. However, what we have learned is by educating them on what we are trying to balance, we now have wonderful agreements with places such as the city of Seattle and other locations in here. In King County, we have an agreement, and working permitting, facilitating that in order to have better relationships and better permits so that we're smarter about what we're doing.
So how about some examples of the building, the sustaining the economy aspect? You talked about the Iraq and what you know people are doing there. What are you doing here?
Huge way that the Corps does that, Eric, is really in our navigation channels. We have the luxury in Seattle, in particular, that we have a deep water port. However, there's still within our region the need to dredge to keep navigation channels open that silt up over time. And so across the country, over 90% of our goods come by water. And we're a consumptive group of people, and we would like to have our goods, and we also want to be able to ship them out. And so we try to keep those navigation channels open. And in our particular region, I'm very proud of the Lake Washington Ship Canal and the Ballard Locks. Those transit an enormous amount of our economic activity, the maritime community, through that project.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the number I recall when we were doing Project Impact, looking at transportation and what the Northwest means to the nation. The figure, now this is about 5-6 years ago, is over 20-some percent of the nation's goods come in through the Port of Seattle and Port of Tacoma. So that navigational waterways making that happen is huge.
And you might be surprised, I think the number is, and I'll have to check that, but 60%, I believe, of the fishing fleet that goes into the Alaskan waters is based out of Seattle. And so we like our seafood, and that's a very important commodity to be able to transfer. And we play a big role in making sure that that happens.
Okay. Well, we're going to be coming back the second half of the show. And you mentioned dams and dam safety and flood fighting. So those are all topics we want to talk about in the second part of the show. And we'll be back talking to Colonel Lewis in just a minute about those significant issues that the Corps of Engineers is working on. But we have this message for you right now. Please pay attention to it, and we'll be right back with Colonel Lewis, United States Army Corps of Engineers.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice.
What if something happens? Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of a terrorist attack.
Mom, if you're not home,
should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Talk to your family about what you would do in case of an emergency. For more information, go to www.ready.gov.
Well, welcome back. If you're just joining us today on Project Impact, today's show is about the United States Army Corps of Engineers. And we have an expert guest on the show, Colonel Deborah Lewis, the commander for the Seattle District. Let's get back to talking about that Seattle District, Colonel Lewis. And we're talking about the guarding the environment and sustaining the economy. And what's an example of how you are protecting the environment specifically?
I would love to answer that. We have a great example of this of a project that is very representative of some of the things that we are attempting with the region. I have to caveat that. Everything that we do with the local officials. We do it with private interest groups. We do it with the state, and we do it with our other federal agencies. And so one project that came together very magically for me on my tour, since I'm only allowed to be in command 3 years, we have a project that was approved in September of in the year, and then it got started in November, completed in March, and we celebrated in May. And this is a project that some of your viewers may know. It's at Seahurst Park. It's in Burien. It's a beautiful example. When you take a look out there, it's a very beautiful park. They also have a place where they study. But what they understood is a large piece of shoreline, over 1,000 feet, had been protected. Again, our technology and our understanding continues to evolve about what is good and what is not good, or not as good. And what they had there 25 years ago is they wanted to protect the shoreline, so they put these devices called gabions, which people may be familiar with as looking like chicken wire with rocks in them. And over 25 years, they had fallen into the water. It was creating horrible habitat for the fish. The people could not walk on the beach. The natural processes of the trees sloughing off into the water, creating nice habitat, was completely cut off. And the people of Burien had a vision many years ago, and they wanted to reserve this place, and the timing was perfect. We had a terrific contractor that came in. Marvec was the contractor that came in, and they worked with us, because remember, 100% of our construction is with a contractor. They're a local business. They were veteran-owned. They came in, and working with the people of Burien, they completely removed all this material. They kept in place some of the rocks to keep up the ground, because they didn't want to import very much, brought in soil, and now you cannot tell a difference between that segment of the beach and the neighboring shoreline that was always natural. And what viewers have to understand is that messy with trees on them is a good sign. That's a good thing. We were walking along the beach, and I understood that the people who own the adjacent property apologized for not cleaning it up, and we were horrified. We were saying, no, do not clean it up. This is important for the environment. And so now, when we went back to visit, I will tell you, hundreds of people were out enjoying the beauty and the understanding of the wildlife that could habitat there. They have an eagle there. They have other wildlife that enjoy it. And so it was a great example
of what the Corps can do.
And but understanding what right looks like. Right. And they're going to continue to work that way. But the bottom line is over 30% of the shoreline is hardened. That prevents the natural processes from going into Puget Sound.
Okay. You know, I was in the Army for 20 years, and I can tell you there wasn't a clear understanding, even within the Army, of the Corps of Engineers, and what is that, and how are they configured. You talked earlier in the show a little bit about the big numbers nationally of uniformed, like yourself, full-time military active duty people serving, and then this larger contingent of civilian, Department of Army civilians. What's that balance then for the Seattle District.
In the Seattle District, we have over 800 employees, and five of them currently are military.
Okay,
and
significant.
And we have 61 different specialties. Just an amazing array of specialties. Everyone from not only the normal structural, mechanical, electrical, engineering ones, but fish biologists, archaeologists, lawyers, contracting specialists, a whole array of wonderful skills that we have available in our district.
And skills that don't exist in many other parts of the nation. I mean, as far as when I'm thinking about, maybe we can talk about dam operations and flood fighting. Next, we had the opportunity to go out to Mud Mountain Dam.
Yes.
It's on the White River, and had a great, I think, half-day tour for my staff, better understanding how dams are built, function, maintained, which is a significant thing, and the value that that adds to protecting the economy and trying
Absolutely.
To do that with the environment. So how about talking about flood fighting and how dams participate in that?
Under our control, we have six essential dams. Lake Washington Ship Canal actually is a dam. It maintains the water level within 2 feet. But the one that you're speaking about, Mud Mountain Dam, was designed for flood protection. And I was speaking to someone who was at Howard Hanson Dam, who remembered back before the dam every year getting flooded out. And so exactly, it's a very important part of our structure to protect lives and infrastructure. And as you know, this region, as I learned on the FEMA map, is quite red for a number of reasons. The one people are most familiar with, I think, is the flood fighting. But we have many other things that we have. Obviously, the volcano, which when it would erupt, as we saw with Mount St. Helens, acts very much like a flood. It's just a different material that's coming down the mountain that you have to plan for. But we also have the fires and the earthquakes and tsunamis. So those type of things, these structures, these dam operations, are vital in this region for flood protection. And we would control the flows on those to try to take what we call the peak off of what you would normally get for a flood fight. Even in the middle of a drought, you can have a flood on the long sense. And I know that you're very familiar with that in this region.
Okay. And for those dams, not every dam has a lake behind it.
No,
that's correct. For recreation. And how about as far as hydropower? Are you Is the Corps in the hydro business also?
Absolutely, we're in the hydro business, but not with all hydropower dams. We have the Bureau of Land Reclamation, we have, or Land Management, we have other organizations, private entities that own dams. We have three hydropower dams. We have one in Montana, one in Idaho, and people may be familiar with Chief Joseph Dam that is in Washington State.
Okay. And then, flooding and flood protection is a big deal for the Corps. You're even organized based on, drainage, you call it river drainage. Can you explain that?
We have the water basins, the drainage basins that we have, yes. The Corps of Engineers, largely in the United States, the districts were designed to be by drainage basin because that's where the flood fights occur. The challenge is that, of course, across the state boundaries makes it tougher for state officials and federal officials to really understand if we don't overlap. But that's usually how the flood fights occur and why we organize that way.
Okay, and you have one main office, but you have some other satellite offices?
We have our main office in Seattle, and then we have six project offices, the three hydropower dams, the two flood fighting dams, and then also Lake Washington Ship Canal. We also have six project offices, resident offices that handle military construction, and then our flood fighting team that's headed up by Paul Komorowski. He has a whole designated teams for every drainage basin. So depending on the flood fights, as we've had every season that I've been here, is we send out teams that work with local officials and the population in order to prepare them, not only in helping learn how to sandbag properly and having the materials, but the technical support and also those resources that they might need at that critical juncture. We have standing contracts in place to make sure the proper equipment, proper materials, and that oversight with expertise is at the place where they most need it.
Okay. You know, you mentioned sandbag, you know, how to do that. You'd think, well, gee, what's so hard and how could that be? But I know you don't overfill the sandbag.
Absolutely.
You have to stack them appropriately, whether you use plastic or don't use plastic. So there is.
For your viewers, we have a videotape that helps train people on how to do it. It is most important they are in place correctly. Otherwise, they will fail, and you might as well not put them.
Right.
But we have a lot of expertise in the region in how to emplace them properly, and we go throughout the year, just as you do with your program. Mm-hmm. Some people might say, well, you just wait till the event occurs. We know that we can, one, anticipate and train people to have the skill level so that they can act when the need arises. And so everybody, many hands, make sure that we're doing it properly.
Well, we've had 19 presidentially declared disasters in the last 40 years just here in King County, and the majority of those have been flooding. And I can tell you and the viewers at home that if we would have had many more flood events with people out of their homes and damages that we see sometimes on the media, and it would have been much worse during those flood fights if we didn't have the Corps of Engineers. So thank you for what you're doing. Sometimes it's very much behind the scenes.
Yes.
You have all these civilians out there, they just kind of blend in with the rest of the crowd and they don't know that it's the Corps of Engineers. It's there helping.
Well, thank you. They really, a lot of unsung heroes on both sides, your folks as well, and being out there to be ready and be prepared and help them do the right thing at that time.
Okay. How about after the flood fight? What happens then? Because it's not over.
Oh, it's never
over. When the water
over.
Goes down.
There's a number of things that have to happen. One thing that is often confused is that if we have to go in and, let's say, a portion of a levee breaks, we must then work with the services, because it goes back to balancing. If you didn't worry about the habitat and the environment, you would just leave the rock in place and not worry about it. But we work very closely with the services, National Marine Fisheries out of NOAA, and also U.S. Fish and Wildlife, to try to come up. It's a very difficult issue that you're talking about, because trying to change, protect the endangered habitat is vital, but so are saving lives. And so when we put the rocks in place, or we have to do rush repairs during the year, are the folks that live there must go through the normal process. And if they do not, those quick fixes have to be removed.
Okay. Just one last item. How about critical infrastructure and protecting that? And we're getting near the end of our time here.
I know. The critical infrastructure, that's something that I can't tell you a lot about the details, but what I can tell you is that we continuously study. We're looking at ways to protect ourselves from a number of potential threats that we have and trying to make sure that these structures stay safe for a long time to come, no matter what the threat.
Okay. And, you know, on 9/11, the attacks of 9/11, September 11, 2001, you were actually back in Washington, D.C., in the Pentagon at the time that an airplane unfortunately came in and struck that building. Tell us a little bit about your personal background very quickly here, and then, you know, that date, 9/11.
Well, that was some kind of day, as everyone knows. On that particular day, I was in a job where I was on the Joint Staff, which is the highest military staff in the nation. I was in the National Military Command Center, which is essentially the hub of the operations there. I was on the operations staff. I was the engineer point of contact for how to make buildings safer under an anti-terrorism scenario. And so I was in that job. We were watching the events unfold. I'd been there a year. I had another year to go. It's a sad state of affairs. Once you start studying this threat, it is just a horrible threat, but it is one that together I believe that we can continue to mitigate the impacts that they have. And when that occurred, we knew that we were under threat. When the building shook, we knew not that it was a plane. We thought it might have been a bomb.
It wasn't an earthquake.
It wasn't an earthquake, although earthquakes can happen in Washington, yeah. D.C. But we came outside, and eyewitnesses had seen the plane go in. We went into, we evacuated after the first plane, heard that the second plane was still in the air. This was before the crew had and the folks on that plane courageously took that plane out of action.
It
crashed in Pennsylvania, and we moved to another site, went immediately to 24 hours. And during that period, I was on shift work at the cell working those issues. And so what it did for me in doing our plans is it affirmed our planning process, and that what we had designed for, actually, my predecessor was the one who worked most closely with the Pentagon design and preparation. Okay. He was actually above where the plane went in, and so was my boss. We're above, and they survived.
Okay.
But those standards, although we did it for a much larger bomb, they held up because that side of that building dissipated an enormous amount of that blast. So some people, well, you can't, you know, it was a plane. How are you going to figure a plane? Well, the fact is those things worked extremely well, saving the building and perhaps saving at least 1,000 lives.
Okay. Well, it's a great example of what the Corps of Engineers does, what you personally are doing, have done, and it's been great having you on the show. I don't think I ever told you my first assignment in the Army as an Airborne Ranger Infantry officer was as the platoon leader for the 17th Combat Engineer Battalion, 2nd Armored Division, Fort Hood, Texas.
You didn't tell me that.
No, so I learned a lot about coordination, bringing people together, building floating bridges, MT-46 bridges from way back when, if you remember the Bailey bridges.
Absolutely.
Timber trestle bridges.
We're still working them.
There we go. And for all I guess, we give them a Project Impact pin. I don't expect to see it on your uniform there, but if you have another jacket or something, put it on. Talk about people when they ask, what's that Project Impact about? Tell them about all that you're doing for mitigation and disaster prevention as a Corps of Engineers.
So, thank you.
Thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you. And thank you for setting such a high standard for the rest of the nation in what you do each day.
Well, we do our best.
We love to work with, it's so important, our relationship and our skills and the talented folks, both in our organizations, but also the people who help us do our job so well.
And for you folks watching today, we're very interested in getting your feedback on today's program or any other Project Impact show. You can send your comments and suggestions for topics on future shows to kctv@metrokc.gov. Or call us at 206-296-3830 and leave a message with the receptionist. I'd like to remind you that spending time and money on disaster preparedness and prevention is a good investment for you, your family, business, and schools. This has been a Project Impact production, building disaster-resistant communities right here in Washington State. Thanks for watching, and tune in again soon.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today.
This year's MVP goes to Jake. Take steroids and eventually everyone will see you for what you really are. A fake, a fraud, an asterisk. Don't be an asterisk.
Weather is next. Your current conditions. Today's outlook. The 7-day forecast.
Explore new worlds. Read. Visit literacy.gov.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today.
Thank you. This year's MVP goes to Jake.
Take steroids and eventually everyone will see you for what you really are. A fake, a fraud, an asterisk. Don't be an asterisk.
Weather is next. Your current conditions. Today's outlook. The 7-day forecast.
literacy.gov.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today.